Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of
Tracing Texts
with Anton
and Sylvia.
And we're coming to you live from deep in the heart of the state of Tennessee.
That's right.
We're going to be talking today about a writer that's not as well known. It's going to be my turn to talk maybe a little bit more to carry most of the weight of the conversation, but as always, we're going to do a conversation where Sylvia will interject her opinions and her ideas and her questions and anything that you would like to talk about. Welcome to this new edition of Tracing Texts.
Sounds great, Anton. So tell us, what is the name of your author and what are you going to be talking to us about today?
Well, the author is Jose Moreno Villa, and you're probably thinking, who is that guy, right?
Yeah, I really don't know much about him.
In fact, when we think of Spanish poetry of the 20th century, there's a lot of different authors that come to mind, and Jose Moreno Villa is usually not one of those.
So what generation does he belong to?
It's hard to really pinpoint the generation that he would belong to, but we could say that he was in the orbit of or around the group known as the Generation of 1927, La Generación del 27. And this is not just a group of poets, although there were quite a few poets like García Lorca, like Rafael Alberti, but also other kinds of artists, Dalí, for example,
right.
The painter, Luis Buñuel,
exactly.
The filmmaker. So basically a lot of different writers and intellectuals of the time around the 1920s. And José Moreno Villa is not really a member of that generation, but he was in the orbit of it, as I said before. Meaning that he influenced these artists who were a little younger than he was. He was just a little old to really be fully a part of the generation of 1927, but he was a big influence on them.
So when was he born?
He was born actually in the late 19th century, back in 1887, in the southern Spanish city of Malaga. And he actually died in America, in the continent of America, in Mexico City in 1955. So he was not really, really old when he died, but he lived a full life devoted to literature and the arts, and he was an important intellectual, I would say.
So, Anton, I know that for some of our listeners, they might not know much about the generation of 1927, in the sense of why historically that's an important date. So could you just explain a little bit to us why 1927?
Well, it's a generation that's important for its modernity and for being at the very helm of the avant-garde in Spain in the early, or let's say first quarter of the 20th century. Very experimental poets, very experimental artists in general, as you would think when you're thinking about the avant-garde, right?
Right.
And, you know, they created works that are known now as classics. They were trying to kind of push the envelope a little bit.
So what about the historical events in Spain going on at that time period?
Well, that is a really important question in that, you know, Spain is not necessarily known for being a country where democracy lasted for a very long time throughout its history. And definitely during this time, you know, we're talking about a series of dictatorships and then the Republic, which was one of the few times in the 20th century when Spain actually did have a certain kind of democracy, but that led to the Spanish Civil War of 1936 to 1939. So there were these were times of turmoil in Spain, but there were also times of the explosion of modernity, the explosion of the new technologies, you know, and also the explosion of the mass media and entertainment
okay.
At that time, which figures
into that generation.
Into that generation, and in a very important way, in fact.
Right. So tell us more about his background.
Well, José Moreno Villa was a multifaceted intellectual. He was not just a poet, but he was also a literary critic, an art critic. He worked as a librarian, as an archivist. He was a painter, and many other things. Like, he could not really concentrate on just one thing. His work is important for its variety, and it's important also because it influenced several important writers that came after. He was born into a well-off family that owned a wine business.
Oh, nice.
and not very uncommon in the south of Spain. And in fact, his family had no interest in Moreno Villa becoming a poet or an artist or anything like that. They wanted him to actually take care of the family business, which was booming, really, at that time. So he was sent to Germany, I believe to Heidelberg, but I'm not sure. But in any case, he went to Germany to study chemistry. And they were hoping that one day he could run the family business. Now, that did not happen. He was sent to Germany. He was a young guy at that point, and he was much more interested in art and in literature than he was in chemistry. And I can understand that, because I myself was never very interested in chemistry.
So did he stay in Germany, or what happened next?
No, he did not really stay in Germany. In the 19-teens, early 19-teens actually, he moved to Madrid. He didn't go back to Malaga, even though Malaga was a city at that time, where there was quite an interesting artistic and literary scene. But he went to Madrid, the capital, and there he came into contact with very important people, like Ortega y Gasset, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Ramón Gómez de la Serna, you know, important people in the bohemian scene of Madrid, and also in the academic circles.
Right.
And he also became, at this point, the inspiration for some of the writers, as we said, of the generation of 1927, and he lived for several years at the well-known Residencia de Estudiantes, or residence of students. I mean, I'm not really sure how we would translate that, but it was a teaching institution that was very important at that time in Spain, and important intellectuals and artists like Rafael Alberti, like García Lorca, like Dalí, like Buñuel, as we mentioned before, they were in contact with that institution. Also in the 19-teens, he starts writing poetry. And again, this is not the only thing he does, but his very first books of poetry come in the 19-teens, 1913. For example, he publishes his first one called Garba, El Pasajero, The Passenger, from 1914, and Evoluciones, or Evolutions, from 1918. And he published a couple more. And he also began painting. He also began writing articles in several newspapers and several journals, and he became extremely interested in architecture, and that would be a lifelong passion for Moreno Villa.
What do you know? What prompted his interest in architecture?
I'm not sure, but he was always very interested in architecture, and I think it probably had to do with the fact that he liked to paint, he liked to draw, and he was just fascinated by architecture. You have to also think about the fact that this is the time when modern architecture comes to the fore.
Right.
And in fact, he was one of the first, not really one of the first person that organized the first visit of Le Corbusier, who was a very important Swiss architect. The very first time that Le Corbusier visited Spain, that was in part organized by José Moreno Villa. So that gives you an idea of how interested he was in architecture. And he also translated some important art history works into Spanish in the 19-teens and 1920s. So that was definitely at the very front of his interests, at the very top of his list, architecture and art in general.
Very interesting. So then why are we talking about him today? I know you have something very specific in mind that you want to get to.
Well, so far we've talked about, let's say, the happy part of his life.
Right.
You know, when he's...
Everything leading up to this point.
Yeah, so everything is happy, is doing pretty much a good job at everything he tries. He is being looked up to by, you know, a younger generation of writers.
Mm-hmm.
His life is going well. Maybe he's not making a ton of money.
But he's successful. He's happy. He's fulfilled in his artistic pursuits.
That's right. And he is very much in contact with this cultural activity around the Residencia de Estudiantes. In fact, one of his jobs at the Residencia de Estudiantes was to organize guided tours of the Prado Museum in Madrid for some of the students. If we fast forward just a little bit to the month of November in 1926, something happens at that point that will not necessarily change the course of his life, but it would, this meeting changed, profoundly influenced his life. And of course, he is meeting at this point, not Le Corbusier or not an important architect or art historian or anything, but a beautiful woman.
Okay, so tell us about this beautiful woman and how he meets her.
Now, whether she's beautiful or not,
he perceives
her that way, because actually we don't know, we don't even know her last name.
Okay.
We only know her first name. We know her first name was Florence,
mm-hmm.
and she was an American woman from New York City,
mm-hmm.
And she was taking courses of Spanish in Madrid,
mm-hmm.
and at some point in the house of a common friend,
mm-hmm.
José Moreno Villa comes into contact with this woman, with Florence,
mm-hmm.
and falls in love with her right away.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way he describes it.
Okay.
So they start a relationship in Spain.
Uh-huh.
But this relationship, which started out going very well, but was kind of stormy in some moments, because they were quite different characters, apparently.
Uh-huh.
José Moreno Villa and Florence. But it was ill-fated, not because of this, because how many couples are there out there who are not exactly the same? They're different, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But in this case, her family rejects José Moreno Villa.
Well, so why was he rejected? What was the problem?
Well, some critics think that it has to do with the fact that they did not share the same religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Her family was Jewish, and Moreno Villa was not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a reason.
Right.
Some other critics think that it could also be due to social class, because mm-hmm. even though Moreno Villa was from a well-off family,
mm-hmm.
and they had money and they had
the wine business.
A thriving business, but Florence's family was extremely wealthy.
Now, considering the extreme wealth that, you know, she was from, has any research been done as to this real Florence, since we don't know who she is?
That's quite interesting. And
now I want to find out who Florence is.
She sounds like a fascinating woman in many
right.
ways. But and we know that they kept in touch throughout
uh-huh.
their lives.
Right.
But he never gave her last name.
Uh-huh.
And in none of the articles that I've been able to dig up and have read, actually go into her family history or what her family name was or anything.
But I mean, looking at maybe archives in New York City of who lived there, prominent Jewish families, for example, I mean, it would be difficult, but perhaps a way of finding out who Florence actually was. I'm intrigued.
I am intrigued too, in fact. But I have not been able to find anything. Maybe, you know, maybe I should get a semester off.
I know, so you could go find
and travel
Florence.
To New York and try to follow the trail
of
this Jewish family that Florence was a part of. Now, we don't know this, but what we do know is that they did everything in their power to break off the engagement.
Okay.
Jose Moreno Villa and Florence were in Spain. The family put on a lot of pressure on them to travel to New York City so that Moreno Villa could meet Florence's family. And they did. He visited New York City with Florence to meet the family, and things went sort of okay at first.
Right.
But things turned sour very quickly, and things just did not go well while Jose Moreno Villa visited New York City with Florence's family.
How long was he in New York City?
Not very long, really. Not very long. Just a few weeks, really. Mm-hmm. That first visit to New York that he made with her was not very long. It was very important in his life, for two main reasons. First of all, because he thought he was coming to New York City to meet the family of his fiancée, his future wife, but then the engagement was broken.
Right.
And it didn't take too long, either. One wonders if maybe the relationship between the two of them was not very strong at that point yet. And so it was easier for her family to actually influence that relationship. But in any case, there was no wedding. No wedding bells were ringing for José Moreno Villa. And
poor
so
man.
He had to come go back to Spain, where everyone knew
that
had been a failure.
Hadn't been called off. So what does he do to cope with this, you know, this loss, this, you know, his engagement is broken off, and what happens, like, as a result of this?
Well, he does two things. The second reason why it was important that he went to New York City is that he visited New York City for the first time and became acquainted with American culture at that point. And most importantly, with jazz music in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, New York City was, at that point, one of the centers of the Western world, culturally speaking and financially speaking, as it is today. And he came into contact with American culture, and particularly with jazz, which is one of the things that really interests me. Had he not traveled to New York,
he may not
have been interested in jazz ever. He was extremely interested in flamenco music, which is quite normal since he was from the south of Spain.
Right.
But he was interested in music already before he came to New York City, and then that's when he first heard of jazz music. He also saw the social inequalities that were going on in the United States at that time, and was deeply impressed by that, in fact. In order to cope with the failure of his relationship with Florence, he did two things. He wrote two books.
Okay, tell us about these two books.
One of them is called Pruebas de Nueva York, Proofs of New York, from 1927. It's a collection of articles about his experiences in New York City. I believe he published these articles in some journal or newspaper, but then collected these articles
in a volume.
Okay. And that's called Pruebas de Nueva York from 1927. And most importantly for us, because this is what we're talking about today, is a collection of poems that he wrote entitled Jacinta la Pelirroja, Jacinta the Redhead, from 1929. And in this collection of poems, he reflects upon the experience of visiting New York with Florence, and also he reflects upon his relationship with this American woman whose last name we do not know.
Mm-hmm.
He also made the illustrations for this volume of poetry. I would also like to know that to say that later on in 1944 he also wrote about Florence in his autobiography, which he published in Mexico, called Vida en Claro.
Okay.
Now the interesting thing about Jacinta la Pelirroja is that he talks about Florence, but he does not mention Florence.
Okay. How does he kind of deal with her as a, you know, obviously that's the subject matter.
He turns Florence into Jacinta.
Okay, so
Jacinta,
that's
and Florence
a code.
Are one and the same.
Okay.
So he kind of makes a thinly veiled attempt to disguise the identity of Florence, which he's not really even trying to do that, but he uses a different name, let's say. And so Florence becomes Jacinta. The book is subtitled Poema en Poemas y Dibujos. So it's a poem in poems and drawings. So the drawings are also an important part of the volume. And everyone around José Moreno Villa knew who Jacinta was. He was not really fooling anybody.
So his friends knew that Florence is Jacinta.
And I'm not even sure he was really trying to kid anybody.
It was just kind of more of a literary kind of device, just changing the name, I guess, or
To cover, her identity, but only, only
very superficially.
in a very shallow way, right?
Yeah.
What I like about this book is that it's a really good example of the avant-garde poetry that the generation of 1927 would become known for. And it was very influential when it was published. Very influential on people like García Lorca, for example.
Right.
However, these days, I have the book in my hand. It has been reprinted, and there's been a few editions since 1929. But it's quite forgotten today.
It's interesting
it's not
that
really
that's the case.
Written about a lot. It's also an example of what we know as poesía pura.
Okay.
Pure poetry. And what is that? Well, if you think of romantic poetry as extremely flowery, dramatic, right? This is the opposite of that. It should be more direct poetry, stripped of any rhetoric, of any sentimentality, not flowery at all. And in some cases, it approaches almost prose poetry.
Okay.
Right? Not quite. It doesn't get there yet.
But it's definitely not what we consider just romantic poetry. It's very different from
that. So I'm sure he was heartbroken, right? Like anybody would be in a situation like this. But he was not trying to let it show. He was trying not to let it show, really. And he was trying to write poetry that was more direct, straight to the point, and almost, in some cases, he tries to detach himself from the goings on, from what happened in the real story with Florence / Jacinta.
Right.
And, this has led some critics to talk about José Moreno Villa's sportsman's-like view of love relationships.
And what do you mean? What do they mean by that? Or can you explain to us a little bit of what the critics are trying to convey with that term?
Yeah, I think they mean something like the view of love and love relationships as a sport.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that it would be possible to talk about a love relationship, whether it be a positive or a negative one, as in this case, from a detached point of view, attempting to do away with sentimentality.
Okay.
I mean, he was very hurt, right?
Right.
But he tries not to let it show. He's not always good at it. I mean, you can tell.
He's making a big effort. So, in other words, they're saying that he, through his detachment, he's being kind of like a good sport about it.
That's right. And
even though this very brief relationship was so life-changing for him.
And it was life-changing, yes, but that's exactly the expression. He's trying to be a good sport about it. He's not trying to necessarily blame Jacinta, Florence, for what happened, but he's trying to take a detached view of it, trying to analyze things. But it is very difficult to do that, as it has just happened.
Right.
Maybe, 20 years later, 30 years later, he'd be able to do that. But right away, when this has just happened,
it's kind of difficult to kind of strip it completely from all sentimentality.
That's right. And
okay.
There's two things about this book that I really like. One of them is the influence of jazz, both in the content and in the form of some of the poems.
Okay.
And you can see this in the very first poem.
Can you maybe give us a little bit of an example?
Yes, and in fact, I have it right here.
Very good.
And, I must say that this book, published in 1929, as far as I know, has not been translated into English. It has been translated into Italian, I think, but not into English. And so, when I'm talking about the influence of jazz in the content and in the form of the poems, I'm talking, for example, on the one hand, about the fact that jazz music is mentioned several times throughout the collection of poems. And if you open the book, the very first page, the very first poem, which is called Bailaré con Jacinta la Pelirroja, I will dance with Jacinta the Redhead, he talks about dancing with Jacinta the broken black rhythm of jazz.
Uh-huh.
He says, eso es, bailaré con ella el ritmo roto y negro del jazz. Europa okay. por América, etc. Okay, so the content of it already mentions jazz.
Right, and also the imagery that it suggests also.
That's right.
Right. So the
whatever jazz suggests
that
for
he
him,
also exactly
you know, the idea of race, you know, also comes into play here. The idea of modernity, because we're talking about the 1920s,
mm-hmm.
we're not talking about what we understand as jazz these days.
Right.
You know, we're not talking
from that point. His point of view, obviously.
That's right, and from the point of view of the 1920s,
right,
which you know, jazz has evolved over the centuries a great deal,
mm-hmm.
and so we're now in 1929, and we're talking about the music that was called jazz back then,
mm-hmm.
which was totally new to him, and he was able to he came into contact with it in New York. So on the one hand, it's the content of the poem, but also the form of the poem, because he's trying to use at some points, even in this very
mm-hmm.
same poem,
uh-huh.
the rhythms of jazz. Okay. In the actual form of the poem itself.
Okay.
I can give you an example very quickly. You know how jazz in the 1920s was basically known for its syncopation.
Right.
It was very important. And so at some point in the poem he says, "Oh Jacinta pelirroja, peli peli roja, pel 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 pelirrojita." So he's trying
he's
to break down
that.
The syllables, playing with the words
uh-huh.
in a very syncopated sort of fashion.
Okay, so I understand now what you meant.
Sorry that,
that
there's really not a translation.
But yeah, it's very difficult to translate something like that to make it, I mean, it would be difficult to do so.
Another interesting thing also, Sylvia, about this book is the depiction of this woman,
mm-hmm.
Jacinta. And Jacinta is always presented, always depicted as the epitome of a modern, dynamic woman. or what Moreno Villa perceived to be this modernity of women in the 1920s, 1930s. Particularly American women as opposed to the Spanish women that he knew. So that Jacinta / Florence is depicted here as a woman devoid of feeling, you know, who likes to play with men.
A femme fatale.
A little bit like a femme fatale.
But I imagine she was a flapper.
Yes, it's more like this ideal
uh-huh.
of the flapper. So in trying to turn away from romanticism, right, you know how romanticism also idealizes women in very clear ways.
Uh-huh.
He is idealizing women from a modern perspective.
And it's a very detached sort of way.
Yes.
That's kind of the ideal of the period.
Kind of detached and playful and, you know, devoid of feeling. Not as interested in him as a man or as a person as he is interested in her,
right,
which you know, it definitely happened a little bit that way. But uh-huh. from that personal experience to turn all women, all modern women into that, it's obviously you know a little bit problematic.
Right.
To say
a big generalization.
You're listening to
Tracing Text
with Anton and
Sylvia,
and we're talking about the life and the work of José Moreno Villa, definitely not one of the best-known poets of the 20th century in Spain, but definitely an interesting one.
Yes. So tell us more about like what happens after he writes this collection of poems. Does he go on with his literary career?
Well, yes, he was an intellectual all his life.
Okay.
And so he came back to Spain without a wife and deeply hurt, as we said
mm-hmm.
before, and kind of disappointed as well.
Right.
But at the same time, he went back to his old life as an intellectual, and
uh-huh.
he actually did look forward to that. And that helped, in many ways, heal the wounds of this traumatic relationship with Florence, at least a little bit, because these wounds never really healed completely.
It's very, even though, you know, it's ironic because he's so anti-romanticism, but he's almost epitomizes this like a continued love for this woman. It's kind of funny.
He tries to be detached.
It's hard to not laugh.
I understand. He tries to be detached in the book, and as I say, he doesn't always. He doesn't
He's
quite
not
get succeed. There.
It takes decades, maybe.
And when you say decades, you're absolutely right, because he did stay sporadically in contact with Florence throughout the 1930s, the 40s, and the 50s. She married somebody else, one of her friends from college, I believe, or from her society circles. But she apparently never forgot about him either. They stayed in touch, not continuously. They even met again a couple of times, but nothing ever came of it.
Okay.
How did they meet? Well, José Moreno Villa was a Republican. And when we say a Republican, we don't mean Republican as what we Americans think of Republicans these days.
Right, it's a Spanish...
But in the Spanish
context.
Know, 20th century meaning of this, he was for the Spanish Republic, which lost the Spanish Civil War to the forces of Francisco Franco. And so during the dictatorship that Franco established, starting in 1939, José Moreno Villa fled Spain because he was a Republican. And so he came to the United States.
Okay. Did he go to New York?
He actually lived in Washington part of the time in D.C.
Okay.
But he ended up settling in Mexico City.
Okay. Do you know why he decided to do that? Did he have friends? I know there was a big expatriate community in Mexico City, like Buñuel ended up there as well.
Yes, that's one of the reasons. He had a friend as well who lived there, who persuaded him actually to move to Mexico City. I have the feeling that the language had something to do with it as well, and that expatriate community that you're mentioning. And so he settled in Mexico City, and he lived there the rest of his life, really for the next... you know, almost 20 years, he lived in Mexico City, and he kept writing poetry. He continued his various scholarly activities. He published that autobiography that I mentioned in 1944. And the interesting thing is that this friend that he had, who lived in Mexico City, suddenly died in 1937.
Okay.
Not too late after Moreno Villa had moved to Mexico City, his friend passed away in 1937, leaving a daughter and a widow. And so what does he do? He marries the widow. So,
oh my goodness, that's an interesting turn of events.
It is. It's kind of strange. He actually gets to see or to meet Florence at some point in Mexico City.
Oh, okay.
But nothing came out of that. I'm not sure if she was... still married at that point or not, but nothing came out of that. And what he finally does is he marries the widow of his very good friend who passed away in 1937. Then he has a son with this woman, and so basically he had a son and a stepdaughter that he lived with together with his new with his first and only wife in Mexico City until he passed away himself and April of 1955. He really kept working almost right up until the day he died. And at his burial in Mexico City, so that the listeners understand how much of a Republican he was, his coffin was draped in the Spanish Republican flag, which is different from the Spanish flag that we all know. As you know, the Spanish flag is red, yellow, and red. The Republican flag is red, or was red, yellow, and purple.
Okay, so that's, he was definitely very patriotic to the Republic that existed for a short-lived period.
Yeah, very faithful in that way.
Right.
Although he was not really the most political minded of people. He was much more interested in scholarly research, in his poetry, and a lot of his poetry is quite experimental.
So, but there, he still had a sense of being persecuted because he wouldn't have left Spain otherwise, probably, I assume.
That's right. You're right. He would have stayed in Spain, like, you know, several other writers, both politically minded and not so much, did. many writers actually stayed behind and did their best to fight the dictatorship.
Some obviously, as like much Lorca, as they could. You know, there were consequences to staying behind.
Yes, in the case of Lorca, you know, he lost his life. But there were many intellectuals who exiled themselves, who fled Spain. You mentioned Buñuel, for example. Uh-huh. He has a very important part of his career in Mexico, where he made some important movies, now known as his Mexican period, etc. So, he definitely devoted most of his life, José Moreno Villa, to doing scholarly research, to writing poetry, and not just to writing poetry, but also to writing articles about art history and about architecture, and he collaborated on several different journals of different kinds. Several anthologies of his poetry came out while he was still alive. And, you know, he was well respected.
Right.
And for a person who was as well respected as he was, he's definitely not as well known these days as some of the other writers who were contemporaneous to him.
Well, it's great that we're focusing on him because, you know, it kind of sheds light not just for our English speakers, but even for our Spanish speakers who may be quite familiar with the generation of 1927, but may not be familiar with this particular author.
And for those of our listeners who understand Spanish and can read Spanish, I highly recommend, if you're interested in the story of José Moreno Villa, to try and find his autobiography, which is called Vida en Claro, and he wrote that in Mexico, published it in 1944, and it gives a lot of the background for not just his early years, but particularly the story behind this book, Jacinta la Pelirroja, and his relationship with this American woman from New York City, Florence, whom he turned into Jacinta for the book.
Right. Yes, that's fascinating. I really think that it's a fascinating author and his work as well.
I like this connection with jazz as well.
So you're going to develop this into... are you going to connect it with other Spanish authors that delve into, you know, they kind of deal with jazz as well?
Yes, and I would like to do that because it's interesting to see how jazz was perceived in those early years. I mean, the first jazz records that ever came out by the original Dixieland Jazz Band date from 1917.
Okay.
So jazz developed as a kind of popular music. It became the popular music of the day, really, in the 1920s and 30s,
of course,
up to the 40s even. And so it traveled very quickly to Europe, to London, to Paris, and to Madrid and Barcelona. Sometimes people tend to think that Spaniards miss out on things, that things get there much later. And sometimes it's true, but in the case of jazz, it was more or less around the same time that jazz was reaching London and Paris. It was reaching the Spanish shores as well.
Right. And many other Spaniards also were in New York during that time period. If we think of Lorca was there, you know, Poeta en Nueva York.
Very interesting as well what you're mentioning, Poet in New York, Poeta in Nueva York by García Lorca, because he also talks about jazz.
Uh-huh.
And he actually had the chance to go to the Cotton Club in New York City, in Harlem. And he probably had the chance to see Duke Ellington. And, you know, Lorca, in fact, was... himself a musicologist. He was very interested in music.
Well, yeah, and similarly, I thought it was interesting that you said that he was that our author today is
Moreno Villa
was interested in flamenco, which was the case as well for Lorca. So we see kind of these parallel situation. They both are from the south, and like flamenco for that reason, and really that's a big influence. But then jazz also becomes a big influence.
And maybe one day we could talk about Poeta in Nueva York and
I think it's
a
fascinating
Lorca, because it's really fascinating as you're saying, but also. What's interesting is the parallels that he draws between, you know, the flamenco music that Lorca knew so well and this new music of jazz, which he sees in a very with a very racial slant. from a very racial point of view, and he you know, compares the situation of
the
gypsies in Spain.
Right.
Yeah.
So from like the view of a subaltern point of view.
Yes. Right. So that would be something, and in fact, you know, whenever I think about the relationship between Spanish literature and jazz, you know, that book by Lorca is also figures prominently in this idea. You're listening to
Tracing Text
with Anton
and Sylvia,
and we're getting to the very end of this fourth episode of Tracing Text. We're really sticking with this, Sylvia. I'm very happy to
I know.
See you. You know, we've reached the fourth episode already.
I know. We've been pretty good at keeping our, I guess, our monthly date that we're going to make a goal and have a podcast. So hopefully we have elite listeners out there who are looking forward to our podcast.
And this podcast is available both on Podomatic and on iTunes.
That's right. And you can subscribe. That's the great thing. Like, if you forget that there's a new podcast, you don't have to go back and download or look for it. If you subscribe to our podcast, you can go to your phone, it'll be there magically.
And the best thing is it's free.
It's free, of course.
Comes at no cost. So that's,
we do this
that's
just because we
thing.
Like literature and music, so, and art.
And different things, that's for sure. And we actually were talking before we began recording this episode about what the future holds in store for Tracing Text. For the fifth episode, Sylvia, it's your turn to talk about something, to choose a topic, and what will that be?
Well, you know that I, the previous podcast was about the femme fatale, so I want to continue with that, but instead of, like, just describing what the femme fatale is, which was basically all the podcast, the previous podcast was about, we didn't give any specifics in terms of literature in Spanish at all. I want to focus on a particular author and one of her particular works. So I'm going to be discussing Amparo Dávila. She's a Mexican author. She writes in the late 50s, and I'm going to be looking at one of her short stories called La Celda. And there is a sort of femme fatale character, the protagonist, and I'll be discussing that. Now that we've discussed this whole jazz and New York, I read another novel called Faces in the Crowd by a Mexican author, a contemporary Mexican author, who talks about, right now the name is just like escaping me, but a poet, a Mexican poet, Irish-Mexican poet, who also was in contact with Lorca and all of them. Also, there's a lot of jazz in there, so I think that would be a really fun podcast to have. But that would be later, because it's a fabulous novel as well.
We don't prepare these things.
No,
you know?
This is like,
just,
I was like,
happens,
that's why I was
right?
like, what's, the, I know, like, so I think that would be fun to do as well.
So that's something that
in
the future holds in store.
Maybe a few podcasts away, yeah.
Now, if you, any listeners out there, would like to contact us with any ideas or comments or anything, we do have an email address.
That's right. And our email is tracingtext@gmail.com. That's tracingtext@gmail.com. So, we would love to get comments, questions, suggestions, positive or negative feedback. You can also leave, I know, comments on iTunes, and that's actually really helpful regardless of what kinds of comments we get, because it actually improves our overall rating. So that would be great.
Yeah. Let's say you don't like it, just let us know you
just
don't like
exactly,
it,
that we can
you
change.
Do like it, so.
Yeah, well, we can modify a few things and make some changes if we have to.
Well, we've been talking today about José Moreno Villa, and the book was Jacinta la Pelirroja. This was Tracing Text. Thank you, Sylvia. I had a great time as always. And
likewise,
I look forward to our January podcast, which sounds also very interesting.
Perfect.
Time now to sign off. This was Tracing Texts, and this is Anton.
And Sylvia.
Signing off from deep in the heart of the state of Tennessee.